Love is perhaps the only glimpse we are permitted of eternity. Ha, ha, ha! This is Instant Inspiration by Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, here in Campo, California, the center of love, peace, harmony, joy, and goodness, where only thoughts of love, peace, joy, and harmony, and goodness are spoken, and only healing takes place by every person who walks on this campus, because they turn their attention over to their divine reality, and poof, it's done. Okay, love is perhaps the only glimpse we are permitted of eternity. The famous actor Helen Hayes made this observation, and it's quite the truism. Love is perhaps the only glimpse we are permitted of eternity. What is it that she is meaning here? She, of course, probably means a very sensitive, caring, emotional love. But love is much more than just sensitive, caring, and emotional. Love is the delight we have in another person or in ourselves. Love is the appreciation of what it is that makes us up. Love is, let's talk in the terms of the pixie dust thing, love is a little bit of happiness, a little bit of joy, a little bit of knowing our divinity, a little bit of knowing the reality of who we are, who created us and why we're created as we are, and what happens with this creator who created us, where that creator exists and dwells and expresses itself. And so when we say that love is perhaps the only glimpse we are permitted in a human form of eternity, it might have a little bearing. Now just think about it. When you see a little child look up at his mommy or daddy and have that trustful, innocent appearance and say, that's my daddy, that's my mommy, you know. What do you feel? Gurgle, gurgle, gurgle. You know, you feel just real good inside. When you see a young couple walking down the street, not all over each other, but just gently holding hands or with their arms around each other and just walking along great, you think, wow, isn't that a beautiful feeling? Sometimes in this modern age, you see the boy or the girl clutching the girl's behind or the boy's behind, and you think to yourself, oh, come on now, you know, there's no time for that. This is not the time for that type of display. You follow me? This is a time where you are being really loving. You're not trying to be sexy. You're not trying to be physically emotional. You're just being sharing emotional. You see, there's nothing wrong with any of those things. There's nothing wrong with any of those things, but it's foolish. It's foolish. Because you're doing it not for your sweetheart. You're doing it for the world. So the world can look at you and say, oh, you got special privileges, huh? Well, you do have special privileges when you are in love with another person. The privilege of loving them 100% individually, yourself. You know, you have that. It doesn't mean that you have the permission to have sex with them. It doesn't mean you have permission to possess them, although that comes up in the mind. It doesn't mean that you have permission to tell them what they can do and what they cannot do, although that comes up in the mind. True love is perhaps the unrequited love like Michelangelo had, where he fell in love with his duchess above his station at the time, although he far exceeded anything any royal person would ever do. But at the time, she was above his station, and she would always be above his station even to the time he died, because he was always just a mechanic. And his fame, his great appreciation, was never really done during his time. It was only later. And even then, it wasn't appreciated too well. If Michelangelo hadn't taken the risk and painted up there, and painted on the floor instead, it would not be here today, you know. But he took the risk of getting up there and painting the ceiling and doing all that it entailed and all that it encountered. He loved it. You know, that too is love. That too is love. He had a love for his art, a love for the ideas, the drama that were expressing in his heart and soul that he wanted to put down and paint. Beethoven, he was not much of a pianist, or rather a violinist and so forth, but He played, and he composed, and it took him 4 years to get his first items out. And the same thing happened to Mozart. It took him 4 years before he got going on the guitar, on the violin. He's 4 years old before he took up the violin. 4 years old before he made a composing, before he composed his own first music. 4 years old! My God, you say to yourself, where did he get that wonderful class, talent, genius? I mean, the composing music is not something that is like saying, ga, ga, goo, goo, you know, or I like you, or something like that. It's having harmonies and melodies, and it's, my goodness sakes, it makes you just boggle to think about it. It's such a beautiful, wonderful in-tuneness that he had. But he was not alone there. We don't call him a unique genius that only he has it. We say he had it, but we don't have it. But that's because he let it happen. See, he happened to be in a family that allowed this to be. He happened to be in a family that loved music, that to them music was life. And so he was encouraged to love music from before birth, perhaps, I'm sure, and on through birth, and at the age of 4, doing such miraculous things. But he did things even before that. But you see, this is love. This is love. And what can we say? We can say that the music of Mozart, for instance, is what we have here. Love is perhaps the only glimpse we have of, we're permitted of eternity. His music is eternity. His music is flawless. His music is grand and glorious beyond any imagination. It's not triumphant like Bach, you know. It's not so lugubrious as some of the other players, but it was marvelous. It was light, gentle, classical, flamboyant, and it was kiddish, you know. It tickled every heart on every type of level that he was working on it. And that's a real art. That's a real art to do that sort of thing. And he certainly is an artist, having done that very, very beautifully. But, you see, I believe the stories that we have from him are told by human people who looked at them from human points of view. And they said he used to chase the girls around and so forth like that. Well, that's a normal human being, I guess. But what do they mean by he used to chase the girls around? Do you mean the other boys didn't chase the girls around? Is that what they mean? Well, if that's what they mean, then they haven't got their eyes open. Because, I mean, boys have chased girls from the beginning of time. And girls have run just fast enough to get not get caught or to get caught as they wanted, you know. They knew how to handle it. And you're familiar with the bullfight, haven't you? The bullfight in the arena of Spain.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, what do they call it in another language?
Tieca.
Oh, yeah. I thought you had something more dramatic. What?
Torero.
No, Torero.
Yeah, yeah. Anyhow, the bullfights... the Toreador stands out there. Is it Toreador?
Torero.
Huh?
Torero.
Torero. He stands out there with the cape and with the sword and with the pikes. And then the bull comes at him. And then the bull has such a mass about itself that it can't stop and change quickly unless they're young bulls. And they step aside. And they have horns on these bulls to make it even more important, you know, like King Arthur's court with the... knights errant doing their what was the name of that activity where they took the spike and pointed it at each other and went at each other. My goodness sakes, you get that through you, you're dead. You're done. But anyhow, the Toreador, he would be working with the bulls, and what was he was in love with himself. He was not in love with the bull. He was not in love with the crowd. He was in love with himself, and he would stand with such dignity and such grace, and he would stand with such self-confidence that the bull could not touch him. And only when the Toreador started performing for the audience, then he got in trouble. But when he was performing for himself, in all the magic and beauty and goodness of his own competent talent,
His art.
His art, that's a good word. His art. Then he was really in form, and he was... And he was touching eternity. He was in love with what he was doing. And artists do that. And you say, well, I never thought of him being an artist. Well, he sure is. My goodness, he sure is. Let's look at another artist. His name is Farmer. And this klutzy old nothing, he goes out in his barn and he sees his pigs getting ready to have piglets, and he gets down there and checks them out. And if they have trouble coming out, then he reaches in and pulls the kids out and gets them going. And he doesn't think, how ugly. He says, hey, that's part of life. It's like a doctor helping give birth to a child. He doesn't say, oh, blood, all this stuff. He doesn't even think of that. He merely thinks of the little life that's coming forth. That's an art. That's love. That's true love. And you say, well, a doctor is just business. Well, a doctor is pure love. The business he does, that's true. But the pure love is when he is bringing forth a new life. When he is mending a wound that is going to give continued life to an individual and continued stability to their legs and the arms and so forth, you know. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. But this is an art. This is an art. Gregor called today. He's at home. He fixed the computer already. He's got it running just fine, and the other one's running too. And he said one of them is loaded with stuff from Stefan and what have you. And he's learning so much by it. And he's got the printer attached to Rochelle's computer. And he says he's got to learn Rochelle's secret passwords to get through. But you see, he's in love with that stuff. That's just a joy in his heart to play with it. He's like a little boy, you know, who's got his blocks and his toys in the sandbox. And he's just having a ball. And there's no responsibility. I don't know if Gregor would ever find responsibility. But there's no responsibility. He's an independent, free spirit, doing his thing. And he's just having a ball. He's just having a ball. But you see, this is an art. This is an art. Oh, is something can be learned? No. Art cannot be learned. You either have art or you don't. You can develop your art with more skills around it, like playing the piano well, or you can develop the violin, or music, or painting,
like Ross.
Yeah, like Ross, right? Here he is, 65, and he's taken up painting. That's right, you forgot. And he's taken up painting, and he's doing such a good job that people can understand what he's painted. It has realism. And do you think he's not proud? My goodness, like a turkey. He got his fan out there and saying, yes, I did that. I like doing it. But not to the point of being superiorly proud. He's just proud that he has developed an ability that he didn't realize he had in such great measure, and that's being expressed now. But you see, that's an art. That's an art. And that's love. See, every time Ross does this with that humility in him that he's expressing through his art, he is touching eternity. He is showing a love that is reaching far beyond anything that we could ever know. And this is where we want to go. This is what we want to do. We want to reach out and get this first glimpse of eternity, the first glimpse of the allness. I was thinking as I was walking the path this morning, okay, now what if I were like Tate? You know, Tuck?
Tuck.
I wonder, what if I was like Tuck? Would I be the father or the son or whatever? Now, what if I was like that? And I had this immortality. Okay. Now, you would certainly line yourself up with a money source so that you would be without any responsibilities. And then you would line yourself up with doing things that please you. And so you would speak your word, you'd be everywhere. And you could do things, you know. You could be helpful to people. But then I thought, okay, now if you're Mr. Tuck, and you're immortal, you live forever, why not throw in a few more goodies in there? You know the past, you know the future, you know everything. You know, interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. And so you could involve yourself in ways that are beneficial to you, but you don't tell other people because this is just your game. It's your choice. Your choice to be immortal. We are, anyhow. But it's our choice to be physically immortal, walking this planet with a body that was untouchable. Wouldn't that be something? I mean, you could go barefoot every place. You wouldn't need shoes, you know? And it'd be nice if you wouldn't need clothes, and that probably too. But those are all little details that can be worked out in a fabulous little story. But now, wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't it be fun to be a Saint Germain, you know? Wouldn't it be fun to be a Confucius or Zarathustra or Buddha or Jesus or whatever, you know? And to be a sharer, to be a teacher, or maybe Socrates, you know? Wouldn't it be fun to be a Socrates, to go around sharing with people and asking them questions and letting them come to their own conclusions? Wouldn't that be fun? But you see, this is love. This is love of doing the unimaginable. Love of doing that which seems totally impossible. But why? Why should it be impossible? If you can think about it, it can happen. And wherever you go, you'd be perfectly accepted, perfectly appreciated for whatever you are, and nobody'd make demands on you because that's not in your consciousness. Everybody would just enjoy your company because you'd be such a sparkling person, because you could tell them stories from having actually been there. and you could sort of shine out history because you were there, and not unkindly, you know. And I, of course, as Tuck, would create that I would be the age that I would feel at my peak, you know what I mean?
25.
Huh? 25. Yeah, I'd be at that age of 25, although that wasn't my peak. That was good. Okay. My peak was maybe 35. But, you know, at 25, I was...
Still stopping.
Huh?
Stopping.
Yeah, but at 25, I was untouchable. I was unstoppable. I was imagination. I was total love. I was everything. See, that was, I think, 1948, wasn't it? Something like that. No, 21 was 48, approximately. Mm-hmm. So, you see, this was a beautiful thing. You want to be at, if you chose, you'd want to be at what you felt was your peak performance, and untouchable, and just having a ball. And it is so wonderful. But, sure, that's a dream. Sure, that's imagination. But what a man
you think is in his heart.
So is he. And the great wise ones have said it. Jesus said it. Everybody said it. So why don't we begin to practice it? Wouldn't that be interesting? Mm-hmm. Now, I have no interest in traveling the world and giving seminars and giving lectures, but I'm doing it. And everywhere I go, the people like it. And I don't feel any responsibility. I go there, and I have no preparation, maybe a little note or two, but I have no preparation. What do I do?
Listen. Speak from your heart. Listen.
I what?
You listen to the consciousness of the people.
I listen to what level they want to receive the information on, and then I just share it. But I throw in a few of the upper aspects too, but I just listen with my heart. I listen to them, and I share with them, and when I'm done, they're delighted. Ellen does the same thing. When we're done, they're delighted. Nobody says, hey, when are you going to talk about something? You know, you just get up there and talk, and you haven't said anything. When are you going to talk about something? Never. They all say, oh, my life has changed. I got to look at things all totally different now. And, hey, I can do anything, you know, and I can be anything, and I can go anywhere, and I want to come to America. Which is beautiful, which is great. But you see, this is what Helen Hayes meant. Love is perhaps the only glimpse we are permitted of eternity. Now, did you ever have that glimpse of eternity? Did you ever have that glimpse of the allness? It's a wonderful thing. So I say, go for it, enjoy it, and be happy. We'll go on with these subjects from day to day with new different topics to that. But for now, I love you very much and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.